telling General Dirge she'd found a glitch in the process had nearly gotten her killed, not to mention her loved ones. A day later, and she was still limping, the side of her face still sore and swollen where his fist had smashed indiscriminately into her cheek. Without warning, the lab door hissed open, and there he was, back again, agitation roiling off him like stink off a marsh. It was barely the crack of dawn, and he couldn't leave her alone.
Well? Well? Is there progress? Have you found your mistake, Doctor?
He wasn't looking good. She'd spent enough time with Dird by now to recognize the signs of a Nymoidian in distress. His skin was pale and clammy, his hands cracked and trembling, and his eyes fervid with widely dilated pupils. The Jedi still elude him. And if Dooku finds out about his lies, not even his precious project will save his bloated hide. Dooku will skin him alive and give the job to someone else. Warily, she put down her isothermogenic probe and stepped back from her lab bench. Movement skewered pain through her bruised left hip, but it was a point of honor not to show him that he'd hurt her. Probably he knew it was a charade, but even so, it was almost more important than she could bear that she keep up the act and deny him any pleasure. General, she said, respectfully bowing, because lives depended upon her submission. I believe I'm making progress. His mouth dropped open obscenely.
Progress? That's all you can say. Progress!
With a garbled cry of fury, he turned to the nearest battle droid, snatched its blaster from its metal grasp, and started firing. Carefully programmed never to point a weapon at him, the battle droids made no attempt to save themselves. When he was done, and the 10 droids were reduced to half-melted slag, he threw the blaster aside and snatched a comlink from his tunic.
I want more droids in the lab, he shrieked. 10! Send me 10 droids! Send them now! And a cleanup crew!
She'd stopped breathing. Her heart was pounding, her lungs no more than flaccid balloons in her chest. The blood in her veins was screaming for air, but she'd frozen solid and couldn't breathe. He's going to kill someone. He's going to kill my nephews next. No, 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 no. She showed him her pain, cried it aloud as she dropped to her knees on the lab's ferrocrete floor. General, please, General, let me finish. I have isolated the unstable molecular chain. I can fix it. I can fix it. Please, I'm begging you, let me fix it. Was he even listening? He was flailing about the lab, grunting horribly, stumbling over the destroyed battle droids, on the teetering edge of a breakdown. His rage was so elemental she wanted to be sick. And then it was over. Eerily calm, he turned and looked at her, his odd, flat face devoid of emotion.
Yes, Doctor, he said pleasantly. Fix it. You have one more day. If the problem is not rectified by then, we will have to make other arrangements.
Other arrangements? What did that mean? General. As though he hadn't heard her, as though she hadn't spoken, he turned and headed for the door. It hissed open before he reached it, and 10 new battle droids marched in. The lead droid snapped off a sharp salute.
Roger, Roger, reporting for duty.
Dird ignored them, too, and swished his ponderous way out of the lab. Moments later, 2 maintenance droids with a large wheeled trolley arrived and began collecting bits and pieces of blasted droid. The new lead battle droid fixed its glowing round photoreceptors on her and gestured with its lethal blaster.
Get back to work.
Roger, Roger. Trembling, hurting so badly her eyes were stinging with unshed tears, Bantina levered herself to her feet and got back to work.
General Dird, you wanted to see me?
That was Barev. Even if the human hadn't opened its mouth, he'd have known it, because humans stank in many different and horrible ways. Their stink was as unique as their fingerprints and their retinas.
They disgust me. All of them. Even Count Dooku.
His internal balance bladder shuddered so that he rocked on his heels.
Dooku.
More than human. Much more. much more than a Jedi, Dooku was the breathing embodiment of nightmare. Dird turned.
You said you could find the Jedi, Colonel. You haven't. They are still here, and they are plotting my downfall. I want to know what you're doing about that.
Something of his earlier obliterating rage must have shown in his eyes, because Colonel Barev swallowed and took half a step back.
General, I am searching.
Not very well if you haven't found them yet.
Barev's little blue eyes widened.
Lanteeb is a large planet, General, and they are Jedi. They have tricks up their sleeves.
Just like that, his rage was back.
I don't care! I don't care!
He shouted, pumping his fists up and down, wishing he could pummel Barev until the human's pale skin was running with blood.
I want you to find them. I want you to find them and kill them and bring their mangled bodies to me.
General, that is my intention, said Barev, watching him carefully. I am as disappointed as you are, sir.
With an effort that burst blood vessels behind his eyes, splotching his vision yellow, Dird wrestled his temper under control.
Whatever you're doing to find them, Barev, it's not working. You have to change tactics. You have to do something different.
Barev bowed again.
General, you and I have reached the same conclusion. Because we are hunting Jedi, I feel we must look to unconventional methods. My only concern is that unconventional methods are rarely inexpensive.
Oh, yes? Oh, yes. He knew what that meant.
If I find you've cheated me, Barev, do you know what I'll do?
He said, half closing his eyes.
I'll give you to Dr. Fernan. You can be a test subject, and the last thing you'll hear will be me laughing as the flesh bubbles off your bones.
Barev's already pale skin drained dead white.
My word, as an officer, General, there won't be any cheating.
Dird reached into his tunic pocket, pulled out a cloth, and dabbed sour spittle from the corners of his mouth.
Who will you give my money to, Barev? Who is going to find my Jedi?
There is a man, Barev said slowly, for want of a better term, a bounty hunter. He's a psychic seeker. Once he catches their scent, they'll be as good as dead. Nobody escapes him, General. Nobody. Not ever.
A psychic seeker? That sounded promising. That sounded as if it might actually work. And if it worked, then no matter how much he had to pay, the price would be worth it.
I want those Jedi scum dead.
He wiped his mouth again, then tucked the cloth away.
Very well, Barev. Send for him, your psychic seeker. And for your sake, let's hope he's as good as you say.
Chapter 6. Behind the mask he wore as Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, the Sith Lord Darth Sidious felt every exquisitely honed instinct stir. Yoda was worried, deeply worried. Not merely about the war, which went badly for the Republic, but about something more personal. As the most skilled and experienced Jedi Master in the Temple, Yoda could hide those inconvenient feelings from everyone who knew him, but they were there.
And I can feel them. Try as you might, Yoda, you cannot hide from me.
Alas, he dared not risk an obvious question like,
Master Yoda, is everything all right?
Because to any other observer, Yoda was his usual emotionally uninvolved self. Not even the wonderfully sympathetic and intuitive Chancellor Palpatine could avoid arousing the Jedi's suspicions with a question like that. He and the ancient Jedi Master were sharing tea in his stately executive suite, just the two of them, an informal private meeting where they could discuss the progress of the Republic's battle against the Separatists without the need for diplomatic phrasing and carefully couched assessments.
Without an audience of senators and lesser-ranked Jedi and the bureaucrats whose job it was to insist upon a data trail for every decision. One day soon, he would rule the galaxy in such a fashion, and longingly looked forward to that time, coming ever closer now. Close enough to touch, to taste, to dream about in brief sleep. Beyond the transperisteel windows of Palpatine's office, Coruscant sank slowly and inevitably into dusk. He loved twilight, such a symbolic time of day. He loved to watch this sprawling, garish city planet descend into darkness, for only in darkness could the light of the Sith truly shine.
And as Coruscant sinks, so sinks this puling, pathetic, crumbling republic.
Yoda was droning on about the shipboard communications crisis. Progress on purging the corruption from the GAR fleet was slow but steady. The culprits responsible hadn't been found yet, but they would be. He could assure the Supreme Chancellor of that. Experienced Jedi truth readers were even now interviewing key shipyard and related GAR personnel. They would uncover the facts of this calamitous conspiracy, and then the newly invigorated GAR would undo the damage of sabotage, thus winning back the ground lost to the Separatists. Sagely, Sidious nodded.
Yes, yes, Master Yoda, I have no doubt of that. My confidence in your ability to overcome this regrettable reversal in our fortunes is unshaken, I do assure you.
The investigation was doomed to failure, of course, as was the purging of the GAR comm systems. The handful of Separatist operatives responsible for planting the various computer viruses in those strategic shipyards were long gone. The sabotage had been planned and executed months ago, and the viruses designed with a time-release feature so that nobody involved in their creation or deployment would be found. Better yet, there were other dormant comm viruses yet to be revealed. Yoda and his precious Jedi and the GAR had no idea what awaited them.
Truly, Master Yoda,
he added, refilling both their cups with fragrant tea.
While I appreciate how concerned you are about this unfortunate communication situation, my office's support for the Jedi remains undiminished. As I insisted only today when asked by Holonet News for my opinion of the war effort.
Yoda's ears dipped the tiniest fraction, and his stubby fingers tightened around the handle of his cup. Sidious hid a smile.
I do avoid making public statements to them whenever I can. Generally speaking, I find these journalists strident and confrontational. But Mas Amida assures me that I must, from time to time, relax my standards. Would that it were not necessary, Master Yoda, but I feel confident that today, at least, I've managed to shore up any wavering public support for the Jedi.
Appreciate that I do, Supreme Chancellor,
said Yoda, after a brief hesitation.
Patience the public must have as the defeat of Count Dooku's Separatists we pursue.
That's very true, Sidious said gravely. I know I have great faith in the efficacy of patience, although I fear it is fast becoming a lost art. Now, was there anything else you wished to tell me, Master Yoda?
Yoda put down his cup.
To Master Windu, did I speak earlier, Supreme Chancellor? Almost restored the Kothless Spynet facility is. Significantly upgraded has its security been.
Yes, so he'd heard. The news did not please him. He'd been hoping for a few accidents, a little useful friction.
Excellent, Master Yoda. I knew we could count on Master Windu for that. Although...
A concern you have, Supreme Chancellor?
I'm afraid I do, he said. I'm not at all sure that the compromise proposed by Senator Organa is going to work out long term. In light of that monster Grievous's attack, Kothless's new government is understandably nervous. They've begun expressing certain reservations about the notion of us removing experienced ships and personnel from patrolling their system and handing over their protection to less seasoned GAR troops.
Yoda looked like he wanted to spit.
Told I am by Master Windu that exceeded expectations the younger clones and their GAR officers have. Fearful for its future, Kothless need not be. And needed elsewhere, Master Windu and the experienced GAR personnel are.
Oh, I know, he said, raising a placating hand. Master Yoda, you don't need to convince me. But, my friend, herein lies the heart of our dilemma. By your own admission, we are heavily reliant upon the intelligence gathered by Kothless and its sister facilities on Bothawe.
He leaned forward.
Now, if it should come to pass that these short-sighted bureaucrats lose faith in our ability to protect them, well, as far as I can tell, there is nothing stopping them from reconsidering their loyalties. Do you see what I'm saying?
To the Separatists, you think they might turn?
Yoda's ears flattened and his lips pinched tight.
No sense of that do I feel in the Force, Supreme Chancellor.
Delicately, he cleared his throat.
Haven't you said, Master Yoda, that the dark side clouds the future? I'm afraid if that's the case, then I can't help wondering if you're absolutely certain you can rely on what you feel.
And there, again sharply, he noticed that flare of unbridled anxiety in the little green troll.
Confident I am that abide by its agreement with us, Kothless will,
said Yoda, his emotions under control again.
Trust me on this, you must,
Of course,
Sidious said, exhibiting the proper amount of hasty assurance.
I'm so sorry, Master Yoda. I had no intention of suggesting that you are anything but in total control of the situation.
Yoda nodded.
Know that I do, Supreme Chancellor, and appreciate your support, the Jedi do. The Jedi's staunchest ally in this war you are.
He was hard put not to laugh out loud.
Indeed I am, Master Yoda. Indeed I am. But still, I must insist that Master Windu remain on Kothless for the time being, until its government is less skittish.
Supreme Chancellor.
Please, Master Yoda, he said, pretending distress. Do not make me take a tone we'll both regret. In this instance, I'm afraid politics must trump strategy.
Very well, Supreme Chancellor,
Yoda said after a moment.
For the time being.
Excellent.
He looked back at the chrono glowing on his desk.
Now, I should let you get back to the fight. Only, before you go, if I might beg an indulgence of you and ask for word of young Anakin? I had thought to invite him to speak about the Jedi life with a delegation from the Rantapharan conglomerate, but I can't seem to find him.
Yoda went so completely still, he came close to vanishing within the Force. And then, his simmering anxiety leapt again like a supernova, leapt so high and so hot that it actually threatened to escape his formidable control.
Young Skywalker,
said Yoda, the faintest thread of tension in his voice.
On Coruscant, he is not at present Supreme Chancellor.
Yes, you old fool. That much I had ascertained for myself. He's on a mission, then?
And oh, how it galled Yoda to admit even that much.
Yes, Supreme Chancellor. With Master Kenobi, has he gone? To see you, I will send him when he returns.
Sidious waited a moment, in case Yoda decided to supply even a crumb of information about Anakin's latest assignment. When it became clear that the Jedi had no intention of confiding details, and knowing that to push would achieve nothing but a stirring of Yoda's suspicions, he accepted the temporary defeat and smiled.
Well, Master Yoda, whatever my young friend is doing, I'm sure it will end in yet more brilliant success, he said. And I thank you for giving up your precious time to me this evening. I know how tired you must be working so diligently for our Republic's victory. But unless there's anything urgent I should know, I'm afraid I must ask you to excuse me. I have some rather tricky negotiations to conclude with the Shah Mistra of Jadoitzen III, one of those awkward conversations that sadly cannot be trusted to the Diplomatic Bureau.
Of course, Supreme Chancellor,
said Yoda, and slid from his chair to the floor.
Apprised will I keep you of matters regarding Kothless. And if further whispers of dissatisfaction from its government you should hear...
Then I shall tell you immediately, Sidious said. On that you have my word.
Yoda nodded, the closest he ever came to a properly respectful obeisance, summoned his gimmer stick to his hand, and made his doddering, ancient way out of the office. Darth Sidious watched the doors hiss shut behind his enemy, then indulged in a single, silent snarl of fury. How unfortunate that Palpatine did indeed have a meeting with the tedious Shah Mistra. But when that business was concluded, and the night belonged to him alone, then would he investigate this matter of Anakin.
For I am uneasy. I sense that something is wrong.
Vaguely disquieted, Yoda returned to the temple in a Senate speeder, so deeply lost in thought that for once the beauty of the Coruscant night failed to touch him. There was nothing specific he could point to, but of late he found himself uneasy in Palpatine's presence. He couldn't explain it. He knew only that something felt off-kilter. But so much was off-kilter these days that he'd kept his feelings of unease to himself, not even confiding them to Mace Windu. Was it Palpatine's continued meddling with Anakin Skywalker? Never in the administration's history had a chancellor been so personally involved with the Jedi. Or was it Palpatine's slow and steady march toward absolute control in the Senate? It didn't matter that not once had he requested these expansions of his jurisdiction, these amendments to the Republic Constitution that allowed him such far-reaching influence over so many lives. Nor did it matter that the more power Palpatine was given, the more reluctant it seemed he was to use it, stepping in to resolve a dispute or create legislation only when the Senate begged him to act. And of course he was never anything but fulsome in his praise and steadfast in his support of the Jedi.
Even so, by this politician troubled I am. Trust him more I would, if his ambition could I clearly see.
And that thought had him shaking his head. Surely a politician motivated purely by service to the Republic, with no thought for his own success or personal power, was precisely the kind of leader these dark times required. Wasn't that Bail Organa's brand of politics? And did he not trust and admire the senator from Alderaan? Yes, he did. Which must mean his concern over Palpatine was misplaced. After all, Senator Amidala had complete faith in him. And as he trusted Bail Organa, so did he trust Naboo's former queen.
But trust them more than my own feelings, do I?
That was indeed the question. And if he had learned one thing during his long, eventful life, it was that any being who did not permit self-doubt would certainly, at some point, make a grave error in judgment. 900 years had granted him many advantages, but infallibility wasn't one of them.
Weary am I. Worry for Obi-Wan and Anakin do I feel. Distort perceptions this can. Clear my mind I must, and seek for answers in the Force.
And he would, just as soon as he'd taken care of two last pressing concerns. The first thing he did upon his return to the temple was make his way to the quietly bustling communication center, where Master Ban Yarrow waited.
I'm sorry, Master Yoda, but there's still no word,
Ban Yarrow said, as though the silence were his fault. His dark face was slack with weariness, his violet eyes shadowed.
I'm monitoring every possible frequency. I've diverted as much power as I can to the tracking station, and I've tasked the central unit to a triple redundancy voice print search with a plus or minus variation of 50. If Obi-Wan and Anakin are trying to reach us, I'll hear them. If their signal's been diverted or degraded, I'll find it. If you want my absolutely honest opinion...
Always, Ban Yarrow,
he said, frowning.
I think they've gone dark, and I think we need to trust that they will find a way to communicate with us as soon as they can. Unless...
Ban Yarrow shook his head.
But you don't think they're dead, do you?
It was a statement, not a question, as befitted a communications expert,
Vanyaro was a highly attuned, highly sensitive Jedi.
No, in trouble only,
Yoda replied. Vanyaro's lips pinched. And that's bad enough. Have no fear, Master Yoda. This will stay between us. I'm using a dedicated private console for my search.
Your discretion I trust completely, Vanyaro. And agree with your plan of action, I do. Alert me, you will, when contact our missing Jedi make. Even if with the Supreme Chancellor I am.
Hands folded before him, Vanyaro nodded.
Yes, Master.
From the communications center, Yoda made his way down to the lowest levels of the temple, where the Alderaanian biochemist labored to find a defense against Dooku's bioweapon. A good man, Trin Netzel. Of course, that was to be expected. He was Organa's friend, after all. So engrossed was the scientist in his work, he didn't notice at first that he was no longer alone. And when he did finally realize, he nearly tripped over himself with surprise.
Master Yoda, how long have... When did you...
Netzel tossed data pad and stylus to his bench and dragged his forearm across his face. This evening, his shirt was striped black and white, his trousers were electric purple, his socks vibrant pink, and his clogs sun yellow. His long, pale hair had mostly escaped its braiding, and his eyes, eerily emerald now, blazed in a hawkish face grown thinner in alarmingly little time.
Dr. Netzel, come, I have to see how you progress.
Half laughing, Netzel flattened his hands to his face.
Oh, you know.
His shaking voice was muffled.
Slowly.
Besides Netzel, Bantina Fernan had recommended three other scientists who possessed the skills for this daunting task. If what he sensed from Organa's friend was no exaggeration, perhaps it was time to consider an alternative approach.
Dr. Netzel,
he said sternly and wrapped his gimmer stick to the laboratory floor.
A question I will ask you, and answer honestly you must.
Netzel lowered his hands, blinking.
Sorry, what?
Assistance do you require to complete your work here?
Assistance? Netzel shook his head. No, I don't like working with lab assistants. I spend half of my time explaining what I'm doing and...
Oh, wait, that's not what you meant, is it?
No, it is not.
Netzel dug his knuckles into his eyes and pressed hard.
Sorry, Master Yoda, I'm a bit tired.
He let his hands drop by his sides, then shoved them into the frayed pockets of his lab coat.
No, thank you. I appreciate the offer, but I don't need any outside help.
Sure, are you, Doctor? That out of misplaced pride you do not speak.
Trin Netzel's pointed chin lifted.
Quite sure, because all I care about is saving lives. And no matter how technically proficient those other scientists Fernan named might be, they have different priorities. But you know that already, Master Yoda.
He did. The Force had told him quite plainly that this odd human was the man they needed to defeat Dooku and his henchman Durd. But even so...
Close to an antidote are you at this moment, Dr. Netzel?
His pale face flushed, Netzel turned away.
I don't know how to answer that. It always feels like you're a million parsecs from success right up to the instant when everything falls into place.
Yoda wrapped his gimmer stick on the floor again.
Answer me precisely, you should. On your success, countless innocent lives depend.
Goddess below, Master Yoda, Netzel said raggedly. You think I don't know that? But I can only tell you what I told Bail. I'll do my best, but I can't promise you a thing.
Breathing hard, he leaned a fist against his lab bench and let it take his body's full, sagging weight.
This toxin's formula is a tricky beast. It has a branched, quadruple-helixed molecular matrix that's specifically designed to resist any kind of disruptive agent. Yes, there are individual components that I can neutralize, that I have neutralized. It's just...
Netzel's other fist thumped the bench.
I'm missing something. If I can just work out what it is, see what I'm not seeing, then...
And convinced you are that no other eyes but yours should look.
Netzel hunched over the lab bench.
I know it seems like I'm being stubborn and territorial.
He turned his head far enough to reveal one wide, tormented green eye,
But yes, I'm convinced. All I need is a little more time. Sighing again, feeling the weight of his years keenly, Yoda rested his chin on his chest.
The gift of time mine to give you is not, Doctor. In enemy hands does that gift lie,
I know, Netzel said, but don't worry, I'll get it. Every problem has a solution. All you have to do is look at it in exactly the right way.
And that declaration was a kind of promise, born of fear and a quiet desperation. This was a good man, a man to trust and leave alone to his difficult work. Only...
No use to us or anyone will you be, Dr. Netzel, if collapsed you are from lack of rest and food,
Yoda said sternly.
Trust you, can I, to take care of yourself? Or, like a child, must I treat you and send over a nurse?
Netzel pushed away from the lab bench and, bemused, stared down at him.
You sound like my grandmother.
For the third time, Yoda struck the floor with his gimmer stick.
Then a wise woman she is, And both of us you will heed.
Master, said Netzel, and clasped his hands to bow. I'm fine, but thank you. I truly do appreciate your concern.
He nodded.
And appreciate, do I, your good heart and hard work. Our senior healer will I send to you. Ease your body and mind, Okara Jay will.
And without giving the scientist a chance to argue further, he turned and left the lab. Because he was Yoda, his float chair was stopped over and over again as he made his way to the upper levels of the temple. Padawans and younglings and Jedi Knights all knew they could approach him for advice, and he would listen. Though scores of Jedi had been lost on Geonosis, and scores more now served in the theater of war, the lives of those residing in the temple, or visiting, continued. There were younglings to cherish and teach, older students to challenge and assess. There were the ill and wounded to care for and healers to train. And of course, there were still countless civilian disputes to settle, as well as research to conduct and knowledge to accumulate and safeguard. Sometimes, particularly when he was the only council member resident in the temple, the sheer weight of his calling threatened to flatten him. That was why he wanted Mace Windu released from his current assignment. He keenly felt his friend's absence. With a dozen questions answered and a dozen more small problems solved, he at last reached his austere private chamber. Blessedly alone, he activated his personal holo-imager and initiated a comm signal.
I can't say I'm surprised, Mace said upon hearing of Palpatine's desire that he stay indefinitely on Kothless. The interim government's very nervous. This attack coming after the attempt on Bothawe, the ruling council's convinced Grievous will come back to finish what he started.
Seated on his meditation pad, Yoda rubbed his chin.
Sense that as a probability to you.
Mace didn't answer for quite some time.
It disturbs me to admit this, but I'm having trouble sensing anything right now, he said at last, his face somber. Partly that's because of the general unease and upheaval in the local population.
And partly because the dark side keeps the future hidden,
Yoda finished for him, sighing.
Your concerns I share. Similar difficulties am I experiencing myself.
Yet you still don't think it's time to warn the Senate?
No. No,
he said, as close to alarm as he ever permitted himself to come.
More important than ever it is that the Senate does not know. Not until we have unmasked the identity of the Sith Lord can we reveal the extent of the dark side's interference,
Slowly, Mace nodded.
I'll be guided by you on that. But regarding my situation, you did make it clear to Palpatine that my continued presence on Kothless isn't helping with the greater war effort?
Told him I did. Agree to deny the Kothless government's request to keep you there he would not. Insist on your return I will, but not yet.
Because the last thing he needed right now was a conflict with Palpatine. Once the crisis on Lantib was resolved, then would he fight the Supreme Chancellor for Mace's return. Fight and win.
And everything else is all right? You seem a little distracted.
More than anything, he wanted to confide his fears for Obi-Wan and Anakin to his friend, but some deep instinct warned him to keep the news to himself for now. Not because he couldn't trust Mace, but because he was so aware of the dark side's increasing menace. Some things were simply best kept secret.
No,
he said.
All is well, Master Windu.
The look on Mace's face was skeptical, but he didn't push. And then, something out of holocam range caught his attention. He looked away, nodded, and looked back again.
Yoda, I'm needed elsewhere, but you know where to find me if I can be of help.
Indeed I do,
Yoda said, and disconnected the comm. Then, before he could think about organizing a light supper, his apartment door chimed. It was Taria Damson. His spirit sank, seeing her.
Master Damson?
I'm sorry, Master Yoda, she said, not sounding sorry at all, defiant as only the dying could be. But I need to talk to you. A few minutes, please? He could deny her, perhaps he should, but he couldn't bring himself to disappoint her.
Very well,
he said.
A few minutes I have to spare.
She sat comfortably cross-legged on the second meditation pad in his room. The disease had yet to turn her bones to chalk. Her beautiful hair, tamed in a tidy braid, lay over her shoulder. Discarding his gimmer stick, he sat opposite her, just as comfortable, and lifted his hand slightly so she knew she might speak. Obi-Wan's in trouble, she said baldly. Something's gone very wrong, and if I can feel it, then I know you can too. Send me to Lanteeb, Master. I know I can help. He shook his head.
Impossible, that is, Taria. More than likely the Separatists on Lanteeb, on high alert, have been placed. Doubtful it is that their security you could breach.
Master Yoda. Leaning forward, her topaz eyes hot with intent, she pressed her fists to her knees. We both know I'm one of the best shadows in the temple. I can find him, I can find them, and whatever trouble they're in, I can help them get out of it, please. We can't just leave them there.
Taria.
Profoundly troubled, Yoda considered her with a half-lidded gaze.
One of the temple's best shadows you were. No longer is that true.
Nothing showed outwardly, but he felt her wounded flinch through the force. You're right, she said, her voice taut. But I'm good enough. There are some things you don't forget, Master Yoda. Shadow play is one of them. Please let me do this. Or are you going to pretend that we can afford to lose him?
Value does every Jedi have, Taria. To place one above the rest is not the Jedi way,
A flash of derision in her glowing eyes. I'm not talking about accolades and empty praise. I'm talking about... Well, you know what I'm talking about. Obi-Wan's not an ordinary Jedi. Her eyebrows lifted. Or did you think I meant Anakin Skywalker?
Very interesting,
Yoda thought, then said,
Explain what you mean I think you must, Master Damson.
She had the knack of sitting perfectly still and letting the force flow through her like blood. He remembered her as a small child, almost too old to begin Jedi training. But the force had glowed so brightly within her that she'd been accepted. And her service to the Order had been just as bright until she was blighted. Now, her light was growing dim. Unexpected grief struck him. He had outlived so many Jedi. He should be used to this, and yet... I honestly don't remember when I first realized or understood, she said, her voice soft, her sharp face soft too. Maybe I always did. Maybe I was born knowing it. But even when it seemed he'd completely lost his way, made those dreadful mistakes over Melida Dan, I knew Obi-Wan would come back to us, Master Yoda. I knew his fate lay with the Jedi. And I know that somehow all our fates are in his hands. How easy it would be to wave aside her words as the fancies of a desperately ill woman. But above all things, he held truth to be sacred. So he had no choice but to nod.
Fated, Obi-Wan is Taria,
he said quietly.
Fated too is Anakin. Entwined, their lives were destined to be, brought together by the Force they were, protected by the Force they are. To safety will it bring them when the time is right.
And now Taria trembled.
Is that true? She whispered. Have you seen it, Master Yoda?
He didn't discuss his Force visions with any Jedi outside the Council, and he certainly wasn't about to mention his ongoing struggle with the dark side.
My permission to leave the temple you have sought, Master Damson. My permission to leave the temple you have not received. Accept my decision, you must.
A breath caught in her throat, and she blinked hard. Then she bowed her head.
Thank you for seeing me, Master Yoda.
He nodded without comment, and that was her dismissal. But at his door she hesitated, then turned.
You might as well know that Ahsoka's felt trouble too. She's got enormous potential, Master. If her precious Sky Guy is not back soon, Padawan or not, she's going to kick up a fuss.
Ah, yes, Ahsoka, another soul destined to temper Anakin's steel. But Padawan Tano, like Taria Damson, would have to content herself with trust. As for himself, alone again, he closed his eyes and opened his weary mind to the Force.
Show me Anakin. Show me Obi-Wan. Safe from harm, I would see them.
But what he saw at long last only filled him with dismay. It took Palpatine half an hour to woo the Shamistra of Jadoitzen III, and by the end of it, he thought his face would crack from smiling. As a small personal reward, he promised himself that his illustriousness would be among the first to experience retribution from the forces of a galaxy united under the Sith. The meeting concluded, able at last to cast the Supreme Chancellor aside, Sidious stood on the balcony of his sumptuous apartment, soothing his temper with the Coruscant night. Day by day, he could feel the darkness building, feel the light side's pitiful, mewling retreat. No wonder Yoda could no longer read the future. He had nurtured the dark side here until the light side's overthrow was almost complete. Free now to ponder the vexing question of Anakin, he opened his mind to the dark side's vortex.
Where are you, my young friend, my apprentice in waiting? Where has Yoda sent you? And why is the little troll afraid?
He searched and searched, but Anakin was elusive, merely a shadow on the far edge of sight. Try as he might, he could not bring the boy any closer. Then he sought for Kenobi, but Qui-Gon's inconvenient apprentice was equally hard to find. What he did sense, cold and clear and unequivocal, was trouble surrounding Dooku. The Count knew better than to keep his master waiting. He answered his comm after three chimes, his hollow image staticky with distance and the vagaries of space.
My Lord the Sidious,
Dooku said, more than usually deferential.
How may I serve you?
By confessing your failure, Tyrannus, he snapped, and explaining how you intend to rectify your mistake.
Dooku gasped.
Lord Sidious, there is no failure. At least it is true the government of Umgul has weakened in its resolve to join us. But
what?
It had been a long and irritating day, so he surrendered himself to the luxury of rage.
Weakened? Tyrannus, you assured me you had them eating out of your hand.
Dooku dropped to one knee, his silver head bent low.
My lord, I do not know yet what has happened, but I have an appointment tomorrow with Protector Chanso Bar. I will be able to read him then and learn who has dared to interfere with our plans.
See that you do, Sidious said. Umgul's revolt is required so that other systems are emboldened to join them and further weaken the Senate.
With a deep, shuddering breath, he leashed his temper.
And what of the project? Is Dird's scientist on track?
She is my lord. The weapon will soon be ready to deploy.
A tickle in the back of his mind made him pause.
You're sure of that?
Yes, my lord. Dird promises that's the case, and he would not dare lie to me. He knows the punishment if he does.
There was no question Dooku believed it, so he would need to be content with the belief for the moment.
But I am counting the days until the old fool is but a memory, and I have a worthier apprentice to stand by my side.
He gave Dooku a sharp nod.
Very well. You will inform me the moment the weapon is completed, and you will make sure the Umgul cabinet votes to join the Separatists. Do I make myself clear, Lord Tyrannus?
Dird wasn't the only one who understood the price of failure. Now Dooku's forehead was resting on his bended knee.
My Lord Sidious, I hear you, and I shall obey.
Good,
he said, then severed the connection. And after that stood long in the sweet night, drinking the dark. Chapter 7. It took Obi-Wan and Anakin nearly 2 hours to thoroughly explore Tor-Bel, mainly because they were the object of much interest and surprise. Though harsh times had bruised its inhabitants' spirits, they still challenged the strangers wandering their streets, the animal pastures, the central artesian well, the common food store and mostly empty poultry barn, the schoolroom, the machinery workshop, the antiquated power plant, the storm shield generators, the locked buildings, whose purpose wasn't immediately apparent, and the junkyard where dead ground cars and anti-grav floaters were laid to rest and rust. Interestingly, there was no human graveyard. It could be these people cremated their dead. They told only 4 villagers the sad tale of Yavid and Markle's drought-ruined farm, their flight to the beast-infested core, and how they hoped for a better life now they'd returned to Lanteep. After that, the story spread of its own accord, and soon they found themselves confirming their history instead of explaining it. Just like Mos Espa's slave quarter, Anakin said under his breath, everybody knows everybody else, and nothing much stays secret. Obi-Wan nudged him with an elbow. Not now. They'd accumulated a gaggle of children, who seemingly had nothing better to do than tag along in the newcomer's wake, giggling and whispering and kicking a soggily inflated synthify ball. Their ringleader was a girl of perhaps 11 or 12 seasons, skinny in a patched shift dress, barefoot with brown eyes that were older than Teba Jacqueline's. She wore a red braided bracelet about her bony left wrist, and her sun-streaked dark hair had been hacked raggedly to chin length. She didn't play with the ball like the other children, only watched from the sidelines and growled when things got too rough. And when she wasn't watching her little tribe, she was watching Tor-Bel's newcomers from beneath lowered eyelashes, her lips pursed in a thoughtful way that made them both think of Yoda. Having worked their way around the village, finding nothing to wake their uneasily sleeping sense of alarm, Obi-Wan and Anakin returned to the beaten dirt square and the charter house. Its doors were open now, and a woman who had to be Teba Branda stood on the broad steps, hands on her narrow hips, watching the children scatter across the square to play a proper game of kickball. Grinning, without bothering to ask if he might or if it were wise, or if they had the time to spare, so independent these days, Anakin jogged to join them. After a moment's amazed hesitation, the children welcomed him with squeals of delight, rough and tumbled him into their midst, and made him one of their own. Obi-Wan shook his head.
He's nice, said the girl with the bracelet and the ragged hair, wandering over to stand beside him. Don't be cross with him, Teeb Yavit.
He glanced down at her. You know my name?
I've got ears.
Yes, I see that, 2 of them.
And what makes you think I'm cross?
That earned him a derisive look.
I'm not a blind one neither. You can smile all you like, Teeb. Underneath it, you're cross.
Well, well, well. Idly, Obi-Wan stretched out his senses and straight away felt the potential in this child. What a pity she was half-grown and could never be a Jedi.
I'm Gretty,
she said.
I don't have Sibbers or a Da. My mam's Bowley. She hurt her hand.
Bowley, one of the miners he and Anakin were replacing.
I'm sorry to hear that, Gretty, How did she hurt it?
In the refinery, said the girl, her brows pulled tight. If you work in there, you've got to have care for your hands, Teeb. And if you work in the mine, you've got to have a care for all. Even your toes, boots or no boots. Teeb Jimmel lost his toes once, and he was wearing boots. But he's dead now. The years got him.
Her matter-of-factness moved him.
Will your mother's hand be all right?
Gretty shrugged.
Don't think so, Teeb. I think it's set to go poison on her.
But... Gathering his thoughts, disciplining himself, he watched Anakin scoop up one small excited boy, too young to kick the ball, and zoom him overhead like a fighter chasing a vulture droid. The boy nearly sickened himself with laughing.
Gretty, are you saying... Could be the convoy might take us to Tebow when it comes. There's a med center there, I heard once, the girl said. Only, if we have to pay, that could be trouble.
Obi-Wan frowned. He and Anakin had kept money safe in their shirts' shielded pockets. They wouldn't miss it.
Or I could try to heal Boley myself.
Except that would jeopardize his cover, wouldn't it? Of course, there was a chance he might be able to hide his tracks. Not heal the girl's mother completely, only nudge her body in the right direction. But no, it was simply too dangerous. And how could he in good conscience take Anakin to task for his impetuosities in one breath, and in the next indulge one of his own, even in a good cause?
I'm very sorry, Gretty, he said, feeling a twist beneath his ribs. I hope your mother gets better.
Gretty stared at him, curious, and touched her sun-browned hand to his dirty sleeve.
You are sorry, aren't you? You're a nice man, too.
On the steps of the charter house, Teba Branda clapped her hands.
You children, get along now,
she bellowed, her deep voice carrying like a marketplace spriker.
You're wanted for chores and schooling.
Gretty sighed.
I hope you like mining, Teeb Yavid. I hope you think to stay.
He had to force a smile. Nothing's written in stone, Gretty. We'll see. Without looking back at him, the girl skipped across the bare dirt to gather her tribe and chivy them to where they were meant to be. They wandered off, reluctant, waving goodbye to their new Teeb friend, little faces alight with their few moments of pleasure.
What?
Said Anakin, coming back.
What's that look for?
He glowered.
You know perfectly well.
Relax, Obi-Wan, Anakin said. Trust me, the fastest way to these people's hearts is through their children. Get the children on our side and the adults will welcome us.
So that was merely a cynical exercise in the manipulation of a local populace?
Oh no, said Anakin, grinning. It was fun, too.
May the Force give me strength.
And that business with the boy? Because when I said no heavy lifting, Anakin's amusement vanished. He wasn't heavy. These younglings are skin and bone. I look at them and... He clenched his jaw. Anyway, we've poked around and found nothing to worry us, and we've broken the ice. So probably we should report to Ricard. Heading to the mine where they could see a bustle of activity, feeling the sun's heat build as it climbed higher in the milky blue sky, they passed a pitted, bashed-up piece of electronics equipment wired to a tip-tilted metal pole.
It's a theta monitor, Obi-Wan said, stopping to look. In working order, despite appearances.
Needles in the green, said Anakin.
Good. One less thing to worry about.
He tapped the gauge once, just to be sure. You ever ride out a Theta Storm? Obi-Wan shook his head.
No.
Me neither, said Anakin. And that suits me just fine. Qui-Gon survived one. His first year as a Jedi Knight, he said as they moved on. He was lucky. Three others with him didn't get to shelter in time. They took days to die in excruciating agony.
Anakin looked at him.
You know, sooner or later, you're going to tell me a happy story. I just know you are.
Before he could defend himself, a warning siren blared from the mine. A moment later, they felt the ground vibrate, faint shudders whispering through the planet far below.
Said Anakin.
How deep was that, do you think?
Deep, he said, touched by foreboding. It feels like they're hollowing the planet.
A second siren sounded, and moments later a line of laden anti-grav floaters emerged from the mine, heading for the refinery.
Windowless, its tall, cylindrical ventilation shafts belched dirty, greenish-gray smoke. Anakin coughed as an errant breeze blew the acrid discharge into their faces.
Stang! Ah, that's filthy stuff, he said, rasping. I hope Jacqueline's right about her pills, or we'll be...
And then he slowed, his sudden unease surging through the force. Obi-Wan. He shook his head, coughing again.
That's a lot of damatite.
Each heavily burdened anti-grav floater was being guided to the refinery by a villager wrapped head to toe in stifling protective gear. Frowning, Obi-Wan counted six.
Yes, indeed, that was a lot of damatite. And it was only a fraction of the quota required for the next shipment to Lantiba.
Look,
Anakin said.
I know we need to lay low until the convoy gets here, which means blending in with the locals. But Obi-Wan, we can't help Dird make his bioweapon. We just can't.
Anakin's distress was a thin, sour note in the Force.
What are you suggesting? Obi-Wan said gently.
That we sabotage the mine?
And the refinery, said Anakin. That way we can be certain Dird won't get his hands on any more damatite for his weapon.
Anakin... He ran a hand down his face. I knew we'd be having this argument sooner or later, he thought, then said, Were you not listening to Teba Jacqueline? If this village fails to meet the government-mandated quota, it will have its food supply cut short. You saw how empty the common storehouse is, and with their crops unripe, these villagers are already living from hand to mouth. I'd have thought that you, of all people, would appreciate the gravity of their situation.
Anakin's lips thinned.
Of course I appreciate it. But we can't...
Yes, Anakin, we can, he said, watching a ground car approach them from the mine. And we must. What we do here will change nothing. Dird's already in possession of enough damatite to mass-produce his toxin. I know the idea of providing him with more is distasteful, but you'll have to grit your teeth and bear it. Remember, it won't be for long.
Yes, but...
Anakin, no, he said. If we do anything to arouse Rickard's suspicions, our mission will fail, which will help Dirt a great deal more than us hacking a few bucket loads of damatite out of the ground. And what I don't understand is why I have to explain that to you.
Anakin turned away, his gloved prosthetic fingers flexing and unflexing, as though he desperately wanted something to hit. The Force trembled with his anger and frustration, chaotic emotions he should have long since learned how to control.
That I thought he did control. This mission has him quite disordered.
I know, Anakin said, resentful. You're right. I just... blast it.
The approaching ground car was so close now, Obi-Wan could see who was driving.
Stang.
I do understand how you feel, Anakin, but we have to be smart about this.
Anakin's anger gave way to rueful affection.
You never give up, do you?
On you? He allowed himself a small, answering smile. No, never.
Teeb Yavid! Teeb Markle!
That was Rickard shouting from the ground car. From the look on his face, it seemed he wasn't happy at all. They exchanged resigned glances and hurried to meet it.
Teeb Rickard, you have a wonderful village, Obi-Wan said, hunching a little and letting his hands flutter in an innocent excitement. It's so friendly, so well organized. Little treasures, the children.
Scowling behind the wheel of his idling machine, Rickard ignored the fulsome praise.
Are you sun-touched, Teebs? Do you know how long you've dawdled up here while there's work and more work waiting down in the mine? You say you want to live in Tor-Bell, you say you want to prove your worth. All you prove is I'm sun-touched to hear you.
The fault's mine, Teeb, said Anakin quickly. I got to gaggling with your young ones. My cousin was just rousting me for it. We'll work every hour that's left in the day. Don't be thinking twice about us, Teeb. Please.
Rickard gnawed at his lower lip, his scars livid in the sunshine. Then he jerked his chin.
Climb him back. You'll get today to prove I shouldn't pack you out of this place.
Thank you, said Obi-Wan, giving Anakin a little push. You're a good man, Teeb.
Anakin Angrily silent, Ricard drove them to the mine, then led them through its elaborately shielded entrance and down a flight of enclosed stairs to the first underground level. There, he rummaged in a huge locker, pulled out two bulkily protective outerwear suits, and waited impatiently as they fastened themselves inside. The suits stank of other men's and women's labor, so heavy they woke every quiescent cut and bruise. Then he gave them synthifibe overboots, gloves, and stout battered helmets, and they put those on too.
"You don't take them off,"
Ricard said sternly, leading them to a metal cage on a pulley that was poised above the entrance to a narrow, plunging shaft. Faint but definite sounds of miners and machinery floated out of it, and through the soles of their boots they could feel a steady, distant thrum.
"Especially not now, for we loosened a new chamber in this chunk dermatite enough to crush your skulls."
"Is that what happened to you?"
said Anakin as they climbed inside the cage's insubstantial metal fretwork. Ricard's ungloved fingers tapped over his scars.
"It did."
"You're not helmeted now."
"I'm back to the refinery when you're settled,"
said Ricard, clanging closed the cage door.
"I'll not be down here for long."
"I thought you were short-handed."
"Short-handed or not, someone still must take the lead," said Ricard, staring. "Teeb, you talk a great deal. Men learn best by listening."
"Sorry," Anakin muttered. "Just wondering, I was."
Hitting the cage's pulley switch, Ricard stared harder.
"Wonder on your own time. You belong to me until you don't."
"Teeb,"
Obi-Wan said swiftly, before Anakin reacted to belong.
"Up above, I met Greti, Boley's daughter."
With a growling grind of metal pulley teeth against metal cable, the cage began its slow, swinging descent of the rough-hewn shaft. Strung lights glowed within grubby plasticeel housings, reflecting yellow against streaks of raw damatite in the walls. The sounds of mining grew nearer and louder. All around them, the ground pressed close.
"Greti?" Ricard raised an eyebrow. "What of her?"
"Worried she seemed for her mother's hurt hand."
"Worried she should be," said Ricard. "Boley made a fool mistake, and she's paying a steep price for it."
Life in Torbell was brutal, so the miner's harshness wasn't surprising. But even so...
"There's nothing you can do for her."
"What we can do, we've done,"
said Ricard, one shoulder lifting in a fatalistic shrug.
"Mining's no soft business, Teeb. You'll learn that today, along with how to swing a vibro pick."
His teeth bared in a smile.
"Mind now, there'll be bumping to throw you."
He yanked a lever beside the pulley switch.
"Keep your feet."
They were passing the next level down where suited figures were transferring chunks of raw damatite from trolley trucks into a huge metal bucket suspended on bulky chains in another shaft.
"Keep your feet,"
Ricard said again, louder this time, as their metal cage shuddered and swung and banged against the wall. Obi-Wan glanced at Anakin and shook his head in a small, swift warning. Yes, they could ride the Force and be as easy and unperturbed as Ricard. But Ricard knew them for farmers. If they weren't awkward and clumsy, they'd arouse his suspicions. The metal cage bounced harder on its pulley ropes, and they let themselves stagger, then tumble clumsily against each other. Anakin went farther, letting himself drop halfway to the cage floor. Amused, as hard men were often amused by a green one, Ricard laughed.
"Keep your feet, I told you,"
he said, hauling Anakin upright.
"Ah, well, you'll get your cage legs one of these days, if you stay."
They rode down four more levels, making sure to stagger at each rough transition. On every level, suit-shrouded villagers pulled raw damatite out of the soil. So much green mineral. Planets and planets and planets of death, thanks to Lok Durd and Bantina Fernan. The air grew heavier and warmer, even though there was some kind of filtration system working. The shaft lighting flickered, throwing shadows that turned them into men of nightmare and deception. Inside their own protective suiting, the sweat poured and pooled. Obi-Wan felt it stinging the blaster bolt's grazes he'd earned in Durd's compound. Compressed against his ribcage, His lightsaber felt like a weapon from another life, almost a dream. And then the cage bumped to a halt, and Rickard swung its door wide.
"Bottomed out we are," he said, waving them ahead. "Here's where we loosen the new chamber. Here's where you'll get your first true taste of Tor-Bel."
Obi-Wan looked at the suited figures toiling in the three cramped corridors leading away from the cage platform. Through the Force, he could feel the miner's grim, oppressive thoughts and fears.
"Arad!"
called Rickard, waving at a helmeted and suited figure coming toward them from the middle tunnel.
"Arad, to me!"
Reaching them, the figure pulled off its helmet. This Arad was a young man roughly Anakin's age with broad shoulders made broader by his heavy protective gear.
"Arad is my son,"
said Rickard, one proud hand lightly touching the young man's arm.
"To be head miner after me, most like. He feels the Damatite better than I do, does Arad. When he cuts himself, I think he'll bleed green. Arad!"
Unembarrassed by his father's praise, Arad stared at the newcomers with narrow-eyed suspicion.
"Father, we've Teeb Yavid and Teeb Markle here, come back to Lanteeb after some years in the Corps. They're staying to see if Tor-Bel could be our home. Put them to work, but be careful. They'll get their legs if you don't rush them."
Arad nodded, not terribly impressed.
"Yes, father." "Teeb Yavid."
Rickard was scowling again.
"Arad will give me tales of you, so mind. And mind this, too. Not a finger you lay to the Damatite without your gloves on. Haul your gloves and your whip-quick-smart topside and fetch new ones. With your gloves on, you don't touch your bare face. You're safe in the suits and you're better safe with what Jacqueline gave you. But you don't tease the Damatite, for it'll win."
His stern gaze shifted to Anakin.
"You hear me, Teeb Markle?"
Anakin nodded.
"I hear you, Teeb."
"You listen to my son. He'll keep you alive on your first day with the Damatite. Arad?"
"Father."
"Best you stay with them until you can be sure they'll not kill a soul."
"Yes, father," said Arad, and pulled his helmet back on.
"I'll see you Teebs hours from now," said Rickard. "And then we'll know if you were born to be miners."
They watched him climb back into the metal cage and swing up the shaft and out of sight. When his father was gone, Arad turned and looked at them, resigned to his unwanted duty.
"You ever been so deep in a world, Teebs?"
He was strong, this young man, a solid presence in the Force.
"No, Teeb Arad,"
Obi-Wan said, gentling himself until he close to disappeared. He hoped Anakin was paying attention.
"You see this, Anakin? You see what I'm doing?"
"Farmers, we were, on the ground, not under it."
"Farmers,"
said Rickard's son, his voice laced with disgust.
"You never used a vibro pick?" "Used a vibro axe on Alderaan,"
said Anakin, almost humble, almost meek. Almost would have to be good enough today.
"Used other bits of machinery when we had our farm."
Arad looked up at the rocky ceiling, close to their helmeted heads.
"That's as high as the sky gets down here. You can breathe through that. How bad are you sweating?"
"It's warm," said Obi-Wan.
"I'm sweating."
Arad's deep-set eyes reflected doubt and impatience.
"You feel panic coming, you tell me. There's been miners die of a sudden for want of wide blue. They choke on the close green."
He thumped his fist against the nearby rock wall.
"Your arts need to pump Damatite to live in Tor-Bel." "Until the drought came, our hearts pumped growing grain,"
said Obi-Wan.
"Could be they can learn to pump Damatite instead." "We'll see,"
said Arad, turning.
"Follow me. Do what I say."
As their new master stamped off toward the nearest rock tunnel, Anakin rolled his eyes. They were pretty much all that could be seen of his face between the low-sitting helmet and his suit's high-reaching collar.
"Come, come,"
Obi-Wan murmured.
"A Jedi embraces new experiences, remember?"
What Anakin suggested he could do with this new experience was improbable.
"Teebs!"
Rickard's son shouted over his shoulder. And so they hurried to catch up.
committed to a long day of hard labor without help from the Force. The work was relentless. Driven by the fear of not meeting their quota, Torbell's miners attacked the newly blasted seams of Damatite as though they were a mortal enemy. Verbal communication was minimal. Hand signals and the ease of familiarity combined kept the dance flowing without misstep. Sweating and aching, prizing raw Damatite from blasted chunks of plain rock with his vibropick, Obi-Wan found himself thinking, "Well, I can't imagine Dird stumbling across us down here. Suppose I should be grateful for that, at least." Without warning, a cold, prescient shudder rippled through him, leaving an icy nausea in its wake. He let the vibropick drop.
"What?"
said Anakin, leaning close.
"What's the matter?"
Arad the Overseer was elsewhere, joined with two other miners in wrestling a new section of chamber free of blasted rock. For the moment, at least, it was safe for them to talk.
"You didn't feel that."
"I felt you. What happened?"
Closing his eyes, Obi-Wan tried to recapture the elusive sensation. Danger. Evil. A merciless, relentless mind. But it was gone now, just a memory. Perhaps his imagination? No. It was real. Something, someone is out there.
"We need to be very careful,"
he said, retrieving his vibropick.
"I think..."
"What?"
said Anakin, when Obi-Wan didn't continue.
"This is going to sound ridiculous," he thought, then said,
"I think we're being hunted."
A loud, smashing crash as part of a weakened tunnel wall collapsed, shouting as the miners made sure everyone was unharmed. Anger surged through the Force as Arad rushed to see what kind of delay they were facing. Always, always the pressure of time. Keeping an eye on Rickard's son, not wanting to draw his ire, Anakin shifted to the next section of their own cut.
"Not exactly a newsflash. We knew Dird would..."
Recalibrating his vibropick, Obi-Wan shook his head.
"This wasn't Dird. It was something else. Unfamiliar. I've never felt a touch like it before."
"Great,"
Anakin muttered, and plunged his own pick into a tiny crack in the green-seamed wall.
"Just what we need. Another problem."
Rattle, rattle, bang, rattle went the next Damatite-laden bucket up the shaft toward the surface. More poison for Dird and Bantina Firnan to play with. Obi-Wan eased his aching back with a groan.
"How's your shoulder holding up?"
"I'm fine,"
Anakin grunted.
"Look, what are we going to do about..." "Nothing. There's nothing we can do. In fact..."
The tunnel slip dealt with. Arad was heading in their direction.
"We need to vanish. No Force use at all, not even to sense for possible rock slides. We can't afford to make so much as a ripple."
Air hissed between Anakin's teeth.
"But... are you working?"
Arad demanded, rejoining them.
"Keep working, no slowing down. You want to be a miner in Torbell, this is it. Make up your minds, Teebs. Work or go somewhere else."
With a warning glance at Anakin, Obi-Wan jammed his vibropick into the wall, felt the shock of it run up his arm, buzz through his bones and every offended scrape, burn, and bruise. Anakin hissed again, then followed suit. And in the heat and the close air, beneath the rock ceiling pressing down, deeply buried in Lanteeb's core, Obi-Wan felt another cold shiver, and knew for certain that however deep they were, it might not be deep enough. Locke Dird eyed Barev's miracle psychic seeker with distaste. So, this was a Drevok, native to Faket, some obscure wild space world he'd never heard of. Humanoid, but not human. That, at least, was a blessing. The stink of humans turned both of his stomachs. Curiously, this creature had no natural smell at all. But that was the only attractive thing about it. Small, emaciated, and hairless, naked and apparently sexless, the Drevok had milky eyes and moist mauve skin stretched tight over its knobby skeleton.
It stood before the imager in his new and secret compound's office, communing with the captured holo imagery of the Jedi as they fought off his droids. Dird glanced at Barev, who stood beside him stinking with fear.
"This had better work, Colonel," he murmured. "You know what's at stake, and that thing's been standing there for nearly 2 hours now."
Barev was sweating.
"I told you, General, as a hunter the Drevok is unequaled."
The creature passed one thin hand through the holo image, then swung around. Its mouth was small and crowded with sharp teeth.
"I have Jedi."
Dird felt a sizzle of relief flash across his skin.
"You're sure?"
"Sure,"
said the Drevok. All those tiny, sharp teeth cut the word to slushy ribbons.
"This one in my mind."
"One? But there are two of them, bounty hunter."
"Taste one, sense two."
"All thanks to the Hive," Dird thought, then said, "Where are they? Where have they hidden themselves?"
The Drevok's feeble shoulders lifted in a shrug.
"Map."
He slapped Barev across the chest.
"Well? Well? What are you waiting for? Fetch your psychic seeker a map."
Barev's expression tightened.
"General."
He returned to the office some minutes later, bearing a map cube. After slotting it into the holo imager and activating it, he stood back, giving the Drevok room to work. More silence. More human sweat and stink as the Drevok walked its slow way around and around the three-dimensional holo image of the planet.
"There!"
the Seeker declared, stopping, its crooked finger stabbing through the holo image.
"Jedi mind there."
Dird lurched forward to get a closer look.
"And where is there? Show me."
He peered at the holo image, fuming.
"I can't tell. This map is useless, Barev."
"Leave it to me, General," said Barev, his voice hoarse.
"I promise you I'll have an exact location by morning."
He shot the man a furious glare.
"See that you do," he spat,
then left Barev to it. He hadn't checked up on Dr. Fernan for hours, and if he didn't ride that woman closely, he knew she'd do her best to thwart him.
"But I won't be thwarted. Not by her and not by Jedi scum. I will be triumphant, and Count Dooku will praise my name."
10 bone-crushing hours after burying himself alive below the surface of Tor-Vell, Anakin stripped off his protective suit and gloves and let them fall to the rocky floor. His clothing was wringing wet with sweat, his soaked hair dripped, his eyes stung with salt, and every hurt was singing a chorus of complaint. So preoccupied was he with these simple physical miseries that it took a moment for him to notice the disturbance in the Force. Beside him, Obi-Wan jerked straight.
"Stang, have we been found?"
They were alone in the equipment room, but voices and heavy footsteps were approaching, more miners finishing up for the night.
"Don't know,"
Anakin whispered, and waited for his mind-dulled senses to sharpen.
"Don't think so. I think it's something else."
"What?" He couldn't tell. All he knew was he felt danger rising on a cold, dark wind just out of sight.
"It's not what you felt earlier?"
"No," said Obi-Wan after a pause.
"But I can't put my finger on it either."
And that wasn't like Obi-Wan. It wasn't like him.
"Never mind," Obi-Wan muttered. "Let's get back to Jacqueline's cottage. We can meditate on this question there in private."
"Whatever the trouble is, it's a little way off yet. We have some breathing room." Danger shivered through Anakin. "Not much."
"No, but enough."
"Barely." Except Anakin didn't say so, because Obi-Wan wasn't in the mood for contradictions. With their protective equipment neatly stowed and the sweat drying on their skin, they made their way out of the mine and into the glorious fresh night air. Beautifully far away, so perfectly high overhead, the scattered stars twinkled, whispering promises of home. Coruscant was out there. Padme was out there. There was a heart in his chest beating, but it was only an echo. She was his true heart. She was his home. Anakin? He glanced at Obi-Wan, whose face in the mine's sputtering floodlights looked bleached to the bone with fatigue. You can't do another 10 hours tomorrow, he said, not caring in the least how such a pronouncement sounded. I'll do what I must, said Obi-Wan. I swear, the way you talk, you'd think I had 1 foot in my grave. Their fellow miners were streaming into the night. They couldn't argue for long, which was probably a good thing. No, I don't think that, he said while he still could. But don't, Obi-Wan warned. Besides, you're imagining things. No, he wasn't. He knew from Yoda, and from what he felt every day, that something in Obi-Wan had changed, thanks to Zagula. You can pretend all you like, Master, but we both know it's true. A ground car's tooting horn made them turn. I came out of the refinery and saw you, Debbie said, slowing her vehicle to an idling halt beside them. It's only now you've finished. Anakin nodded. Odd, when everybody else was walking home, that she'd choose to drive. You're working late, too, and after a day in the power plant. Don't you get to rest? It's long hours, we're all working, she sighed. So much damatite they want in the city. Do you know why? Somebody called out a good night. Debbie waved back, smiling. No, I don't even think Ricard knows. Can I take you Teebs to Jacqueline's? You're staying under her roof tonight, aren't you? We are, said Obi-Wan, and we thank you. But we'll walk Teba. After so long underground, the fresh air is a relief. She laughed. Bed is a relief, but walk if you like. They watched her drive away, threading a path between the wandering groups of miners. Footsteps behind them had them looking around. It was Arad. Stripped of his smothering protective gear, even in the fitful light, it was clear he was his father's son. You'll be back tomorrow, he said, passing them. 2 days to the convoys here, and there's more damatite needed yet. Anakin grimaced. Ugh, I can't wait, because there's nothing I like better than smelling like a weak old Bantha corpse. Yes, said Obi-Wan, his lips twitching. It is a rather unfortunate aroma. I hate to break it to you, cousin, but I'm not the only one with a problem. I know, Obi-Wan said, heaving a sigh. And no bath until tomorrow. Truly, this is a most uncivilized life. Anakin threw up his hands. Now he notices. Come along, said Obi-Wan and clapped him on the shoulder. I'm hungry, I'm stinking, and right now that pitiful mattress on the floor of Jacqueline's storeroom looks to me like the height of luxury. They could have joined some of the other villagers leaving the mine. There were nods, smiles, half-issued invitations. But by tacit consent, they made their excuses, claiming the fatigue of a first day, and kept on walking, stretching their senses to the breaking point. Only they couldn't put a name to the creeping dread they felt. All they knew was that fresh trouble stalked them, and there was nowhere to run. Chapter 8 Back at the cottage, Teba Jacqueline gave them a measured once-over and grudging approval.
I've had good reports, she said, though Ricard wasn't pleased it took you so long to reach the mine.
Obi-Wan pretended anxiety.
We were sorry to vex him, Teba. He did say we could take a small wander around the village, get our bearings and lay eyes on the place. It's true, we poked our noses into most corners.
And kicked a bowl around the square with a gaggle of grubby young'uns, Jacqueline added. So Branda tells it.
Don't look at me, Teba, that was Markle.
Jacqueline's severe expression eased.
It's a good heart that likes a young'un. And you were a sweet one to Gretty, Yavid. A wild child she is, no fault of her own.
I was sorry to hear her mother is so ill, he said quietly. Gretty's young to have that kind of fear.
You think fear respects age, Teeb?
Jacqueline snorted.
Maybe you're a fool after all. I've got stew for you, but no clean clothes. There's one or two thinking they could spare you a shirt each, but they'll not look till tomorrow. You're filthy in what you're wearing, but what you're in will need to do you